We took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We looked down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Old Hickory said we could take them by
Ladies
surprise.
And gentlemen,
if
welcome
we
back
fire muskets,
to
we looked them in the
eyes. Comics, we otherwise known
fire,
right now as Rather Be Watching Jessica Jones Cast. Keeps happening that way.
Or in this case, Hey Kids Toys.
Yes. Yeah, Hey Kids Toys. Hey Kids Comics Toys.
That's right.
As you know, if you've been listening, you find us coming into the tail end of a story arc. Cole, what was the name of our arc?
This is Toylandia.
There you go.
And we are so yet on issue again. Four. We're tour guides, as it were.
Right. Issue four. I think it's issue 160. I don't know. I work retail as a manager, and this time of year, by the way, anybody who's listening to this on Drop Day, we hope you had a great Thanksgiving. And
absolutely, we hope that you're this is your release after, you know, like you've been out shopping for toys all day and Black Friday sales and
right
trampled, and you come in and it's like, oh damn it, they're still talking about toys.
And yeah, I hope you survive the purge like Black Friday that's going on out there. That's what I wanted to do in my store, was be like, all right, for the next 30 seconds it's the purge. There are no laws. Whatever you can do in the next 30 seconds, just do it, because that's what's going to happen anyway. But yeah, so we've talked about, we kind of gave an overview in the first issue.
And this is actually issue 159.
159, not quite 160.
This is issue 159, Toylandia, Rise of the Indies.
That's right. Because what we did, we've talked about the kind of the intro to it and toys, how they started and where they've been. We talked about your Mego Mego toys. Last issue, we talked about kind of the mainstream once the big corporations got a hold of it, started really churning out all of your Avengers, your X-Men, your Justice League, you know, your DC Directs, your
Metallics. All of your incredibly marketable.
Right.
You wanted something, essentially the idea behind a toy company taking out a license is that you have some sort of support. A movie or a television series or an ongoing comic series, for example. It doesn't hurt if there's a related cartoon or a movie out. It helps build the brand, and people want literally a piece of the action.
Right.
The only really... And it's funny because I saw the... like CEO or something like that of Hasbro the other day talking about how they'd have plenty of Star Wars toys in the stores for Christmas this year after selling out early. And he was talking about, you know, well, you know, we've got the movie coming up, and then we expect it'll be in theaters well into the new year, and then you've got the, I forget the term he used, but effectively the home theater aftermarket, the home video aftermarket. I'm thinking, where did you come from? Do you not realize that Star Wars has, with the exception of a decade that it went away completely, never really needed?
Right.
From 1995 to the present, it's augmented, it's boosted tremendously by the presence of a new film.
It was huge.
But it's
yeah.
Never needed a film in the theaters to keep that momentum going. And, of course, now with Disney, it's going to have a new film in the theaters every single year, so it will never go
Yeah, what
away.
Did they just say? They just said that they would...
I will be long dead and buried and return to my constituent dust by the time they finish making Star Wars films at Disney.
Well, no, literally, didn't they say that for the foreseeable future, they're going to release a release a movie every year as long as they possibly can? Wasn't that kind of what the latest...
Yeah, that's essentially the idea. That's kind of what they'd like to see happen, and I don't see why not, really. Provided they continue to maintain that level of quality that their first outing suggests and what they're following it with, again, suggests. But that's a story for the Rancor Pit.
It is, but it kind of ties in, because what we're...
Yeah, that's true, because we are talking about how the strength of the source material...
Right, like...
...often dictates...
Spinning out of the last issue was all about the corporatization of toys, all about the marketing, all about how we ended up with, like, the GW Bridge toys and the and the Fitzroy...
Yeah, and apparently sometimes you don't really need the support of...
Right. Marketing's great, but marketing doesn't always work out, which is why it is so... It was so important that the topic of this issue of Hey Kids Comics came about, which was the ability, and I think it runs concordant with, you know, the technological paradox that we're experiencing right now, where we can, you know, we're exponentially growing in our ability to do anything at this point, like to the point where by the end of this issue we'll be talking about, you know, you can go out, I have a guy I work with that has a 3D printer, and he's like, what do you want for Christmas? And I was like, you know what I'm into. He's like, all right, I'll just make it. You know, like you can do that now. Like, you want to talk about independent toy manufacturing? Cole has a toy of himself.
Yeah, that's true. I do have a figurine of myself. I call it Micro Me.
Yeah, a scanned rotoscope, like full-on sculpted, cut, painted.
Yeah, it's frightening to me because I was wearing a T-shirt that I had custom made. That right. I just happened to have on when this was scanned, and it's reproduced in perfect miniature.
Mm-hmm.
And like, here is a scanned image of me wearing a shirt that I had made of a photograph that I took. And it exactly. Suddenly becomes very meta, and my brain is melting. So let's get on with the show.
Well, and so by the end of the last issue, we were talking about DC Direct. And we were talking about how they sold direct... to the, you know, through, maybe through Diamond, but they were selling direct to comic book shops. And it was a theory that, and we said that what they played to was, you know, the opening, the first, their opening gambit were things like Death and like Swamp Thing and things that were deemed unmarketable by yeah. your Kenners, your Mattels, you know, your Toy Biz. Yet, on a smaller scale, when made to batch and sold, they worked really well in the direct market. What we saw after that were people saying, "Hey, that works. That works. Let's do that."
Yeah, and the funny thing is, some of the earliest forays, we also reached a point where we weren't quite at the instantaneous production level mm-hmm. that we are today, where tooling is no longer the big bad that it once was
right.
in manufacture. We can literally will things into existence. We're just shy of that.
Things are willing. The computers are willing the computers into existence. That's how it all ends, dude. Don't get me started. Foil hat. I'll do it.
Precisely. So what you ran into... you know, then is you have the little independent comic can now become a viable... There's a resource because the direct market's been opened up. The comic shops are interested in taking on the toys. You know, they want to have what the big box, the Toys R Us and stuff, have. But then they also... then the doors open for all kinds of stuff that you're not going to find.
Right. Well, I think
that's the thing they really wanted yep. is that kind of exclusivity to their market.
They want the stuff that Toys R Us has, but more importantly, they want the stuff that Toys R Us doesn't have.
Yes.
That's absolutely the case. And no more, and if we're going to start this, we're going to start it in the right place. Because, like you said, there were people before, and you know, but, Cole, there is only one man.
Oh, yeah. But before we get to that man, I really think, I may be wrong on the chronology, but I really think that the ice was broken, the trail was blazed by Little Antarctic Press here in Texas.
Oh, I agree.
And, yeah. You know, Ben Dunn's little company came out with the most god-awful looking Warrior Nun Ariella figure.
Oh, man, yes.
You could imagine. And to make matters worse, then they had the gold version, the holy white version. The good God, this sucks. You know, they were just awful. And then they had the, what's her name, Shotgun Mary.
Yes.
You were starting to see a little bit of an improvement, but not much. And then all of a sudden, they came out with another Warrior Nun figure, couple of years later. I'm not sure the timing. I think it was like 1997 saw the one that looked like Ben Dunn's artwork.
Right. Finally, they were
and
able
they finally
to.
Said, you know, this ought to look like the character, you know, like the art that's on the card.
Right.
And, you know, I never really been able to fathom Warrior Nun Ariella.
No.
I mean, I can't say Warrior Nun Ariella without wanting to say it like Jerry Seinfeld. She's a warrior nun.
But, I mean, it came out at a very specific time in comics where you could do something called Warrior Nun Ariella.
Yeah. Well, I think that trail was blazed by none other than these four young lads of a reptilian persuasion that we know
as
the
Teenage
Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's very
true. And that created a boom of unprecedented scale,
right,
that resonates to this day. But what happened over at Antarctic Press is, in the mid to late 90s, they started commissioning runs of action figures based on their characters.
Right, because why not?
So yeah, you got, you know, the aforementioned ones, you got, I don't know if they ever did Battle Pope or not. I'm not sure if that Lears or somebody else.
Battle Pope.
but you got like a figure of Cheetah from Gold Digger.
Right.
You got several other characters that escape me at the moment, but you know, that they were beginning to get develop a fully realized line of character figures based on these comics, rather, that, you know, a lot of people might never have heard of. Antarctic would go on to put out Stan Sakai's Soggy Ojimbo, who previously had made a foray, I think we probably talked about this in the distant past, made a foray into the action figures through the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toy line.
Right. And here's the thing about that. Like, while they might have missed the proverbial target on the Ariella Warrior Nun Ariella figure, and possibly the Cheetah figure, these were a couple years before the Usagi Yojimbo figure. But the Usagi Yojimbo figure is beautiful.
It is dead on. I mean, yeah. Even right down to the point of having the little Tokage lizard,
right,
like accessory.
Like, they did.
It is fully articulated, I will point out. I actually have one, because we wound up with a spare Usagi Yojimbo figure at one point. I sold the figure but kept the lizard. It actually is perched on top of a little artsy-fartsy drawer thing on the top of my desk of time-wasting distractions. So, yes, that's a lot to say. But that was your, I think, I really believe that was your tipping point. When little bitty Antarctic Press is coming along and doing this, and then there was a certain someone with more money than sense.
Well, and I don't know about that.
Certainly the money.
Definitely the money
to jump in a big way,
like huge, like just insane way, and that was.
And I guess the sense is was definitely there because of the inexplicable success.
But he, we're talking about Todd McFarlane. Just call him what you will. He was a visionary in this respect.
Yes, he was. I think he recognized something about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles line, about a lot of other things that were going on in the market during those times. And I think he also realized that you have two choices. You can either sign off your characters to someone who does not give a rat's ass about them.
Right.
Or you can maintain control. Granted, the risks are colossal. But at that point, he was at the height of his popularity, if not powers, and he was uniquely positioned to pursue what at the time began, yes, if you remember this, what began as Todd Toys.
Todd Toys. Well, he
was also, Todd Toys.
You've got to under the whole thing we're talking about right now is definitely, it runs a parallel to what was going on in society, because what we had was this, it started with the idea, you know, the 80s, 90s, early 90s, late 70s, 80s, early 90s idea of what success was. You know, you went to work for Mattel, you went to work for Toy Biz, you sat in a boardroom, you came up with ideas, those were all signed off on by committee, they went over to the designers, those, you know, it was that idea, it was that, you know, the, not necessarily Wall Street, but, you know, like that 80s idea of double, you know, that double-breasted suit, go to work in the morning, sit in your cubicle, idea of what success was.
As
reflected in movies, as reflected in TV, as reflected in society, as reflected in, you know, the show Moonlighting, as reflected in everything that Michael J. Fox was ever in, besides Back to the Future, you know, that's what it was. Todd McFarlane was the tipping point for this, I think, in a lot of ways, because he was the guy that, you know, he was the MTV generation, the screw you, I'm going to do it myself, because nobody else will do it as well as I do. The same reason I went and made Image Comics, the same reason that Spawn's going to be super popular, and the same reason that I took a chance on Rob Liefeld, and I'm sorry. But, you know, that's his contribution to this, was the rebellious nature of, you know, at the time probably youth, I guess, and saying screw you, we're gonna make our own toy line, and doing it, and having the balls to actually put his money where his mouth was and do it, without a 3D printer, without, you know, any of that stuff, actually doing the tooling and the sculpts.
Yeah, actually, you know, having to go to China and work with the manufacturing process there in the factory level and get these things going. And one of the things they did very shrewdly was to play upon what they, I mean, you know, you play upon your own strengths and what cards you have at hand. And he had certainly had a lot of aces up his sleeve because he could play upon the fact that he was a bit of a celebrity in 80s comics.
Right.
80s and 90s comics to the point, you know, that he appeared on Bob.
Oh, he did appear on Bob, didn't he?
Yes, indeed.
The Bob Newhart comic book. Yep. Bob. Oh, my God, you're right.
So, you know, he was able to utilize that popularity to get his toy line in front of everybody because everybody was talking about it at a time when you had comic book magazines, not comic book websites.
Here's the thing, though, right? Like, you had, this was 94, so DC Direct had started, I think, making their direct-to-market stuff around that time. These toys, and I remember, because I was still in high school, you know, I was just coming out of high school. These toys were the first toys I can remember seeing and going, just holy shit. Like, they were insane. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, the thing about it was they were a combination of insane and crappy. The earliest Spawn toys were terrible. But then, you know, we talked in the last issue about how Toy Biz started out with some of the worst mm-hmm. action figures you could ever hope to see or, you know, be subject to.
Right.
Subject to.
I like it. Subject.
Subject to. But they, you know, over time, the quality improved once they got themselves to market. But Spawn Toys, Todd Toys, which would become McFarlane Toys, you know, the early stuff was dreadful, but they were also one of the first manufacturers to play with the idea of kind of being multimedia
uh-huh.
in the approach, because you had figures that were hard plastic, you had figures that had action features like the clown figure,
mm-hmm.
which came in package mostly with the critter face, I guess you'd call it. Violator face.
Violator face.
But it,
which is the name of my next album, by the way.
Violator face.
There's no other. Awful. Awful.
God. It's like one of those acting exercises, like lion face, lemon face.
It is. Face. Spawn face, violator face.
But the that figure would be packaged either with the demon head or the clown head, rarely with the clown head showing.
Right.
And they would sort of like flip around inside the body so it could look more like what you're expecting from the clown.
Right.
If you're expecting anything at all. But the, what was it? The Violator figure was rubber with a wire armature and some plastic, hard plastic features. And the Spawn to try to give you some aspect of his cape that went on for days had this weird little hinged cape situation going on.
Right.
And then you had Overt Kill, who was...
Overt Kill.
Overt Kill, interestingly enough, there was a video, VHS video thing of Todd McFarlane and Stan Lee co-creating, like doing this like little creator roundtable type thing, and the character they created for that was Overkill. And I always just cringed when I
it's awful. Just awful.
When they, you know, when they brought it to the toy line and just renamed it and essentially looked the same as the character. I guess he owned the drawing. And it became Overt Kill.
Right.
Stan wasn't going to give up Overkill without a fight. And, you know, it's much like when the first Youngblood, Shudder, initially the big rock character was Bedrock. But I think Hanna-Barbera got after their ass and they changed it to Badrock, which actually sounds less ridiculous, slightly. And did make for a great joke in a Simpsons superhero parody comic where one of the characters was one of the old people, was Bad Pan.
Bad? Like Bedpan? Like...
Yes. And the thing is, you would have to know the history of Youngblood to get the joke.
And so, yeah, I mean, he put out...
And, then, and you had Rooted Hair with, like, the clown.
Yes.
And male... or whatever the hell that is.
But he did, he went all in on a lot of things.
Oh yeah, and then they had like a figurine of like Spawn, figurine two-pack of Spawn versus the Violator. And that was, you know, their early foray. It was just a handful of toys in series one. And there was the much coveted, much sought after in its day, Hamburger Head Spawn.
Yes, yes, yeah. That... Oh my god. Just But the thing is, he did it.
Yeah.
And they were in toy stores.
It kept coming and it kept coming. And then it started to reflect what was going on in the comics. And then it started to pull the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and started to invite other creators to bring their characters into the line, like the Creech.
The Creech. Tony Daniels, the Creech, yes.
Yes, the Creech, and who am I thinking of here? It was just I think even Bad Bedpan there made it. I think Bad Rock even made it in. The Max.
The Max definitely Pit. Made it in. Yeah. Later Walking Dead figures. You know, they...
Yeah. Well, I mean, eventually they branched out into things like the movie Maniacs was one of the most shrewd moves they ever made because Agreed. They recognized this... That was the opening to what I recognized then as eventually anything you ever loved will be a collectible. And that has borne out. I beat that drum to death. But you would see things in the Spawn line, like Spawn Nitro Riders.
Right. I remember
like
those.
Spawn creature things with weird-ass motors, like wacky racers from hell. And, you know, there were all these just... It was almost like evolution. In that, you know, natural selection throws out 100 variations and sees what flies.
Well, I love the fact that, and not only, yeah, but like you said, he did invite other creators to come, and by other creators, we don't just mean toy people, like, hey, Clive Barker, why don't you come on by and create some toys? Oh, you did? Great, let's sell them to Toys R Us. Do you remember that whole Tortured Souls thing?
Yes.
Clive Barker's Tortured Souls line that they sold out of Toys R Us, which was, like, Hellraiser disturbing. More disturbing than Hellraiser disturbing. And they were just selling them right out of Toys R Us, and they were selling, too. They were moving.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was probably one of the shrewdest moves that that Todd McFarlane ever did was to... sell to Toys R Us.
Well, and you're also kind of that generation where you're talking about where the Todd toys, the McFarlane toys, were starting to come of their own. Were they toys that you actively sought out yourself? I think I'd like to have you talk a bit about era of toys and the things that you actually bought.
Yeah, no, I totally did. Like, because you know, we come from an era where what we're talking about here is Justice League toys, the Kenner toys, the Total Justice toys, 3 3/4, 4 and 4.5 inch tall toys until you started getting into like the DC Direct stuff. Well, what Spawn gave us was, you know, the air of naughty adult toys that could be marketed to children. We weren't supposed to be reading Spawn. We weren't supposed to be reading Witchblade. We weren't supposed to be reading The Darkness. But here they are, these adult collectible toys, before there was such a thing as adult collectible toy market. So we had all of these toys at our disposal. I think probably one of the smartest business decisions, and Todd McFarlane has made a lot of smart business decisions, and we haven't even talked about the Kiss toy line yet, but... One of the smartest business decisions that that Todd McFarlane ever did was to call up Toys R Us and work out a distribution deal with them, because all of a sudden, next to your Sergeant Slaughter, fights Cobra Commander 2-pack, you have this, you know, fairly articulate 8-inch Spawn action figure that comes with a ton of chains, a shit ton of spikes. Tombstones, I mean, anybody of my generation was buying those up, whether they read Spawn or not. One of the other things that Todd McFarlane did was use his media appeal to sell toys. Rarely would you go to and again, this is a product of the times, but I think it's very specific to speak to how the times have changed. You had Todd McFarlane going to at the time at which these were coming out, I know specifically, things like Wizard World and things like, you know, your San Diego Comic-Cons and stuff like that as not only a comic book creator, but as a toy creator. And I'll never forget, it was one of the San Diego Comic-Cons, like 2001-ish, maybe even earlier than that. No, this had to be 98, 99. I remember getting a package of what they called a package of demons from the McFarlane. You know,
oh, yeah, they used to do those little, mm-hmm. Bago.
Worm body with like you said, rubber with a wire articulation.
Yeah, they did the same thing with the, I think they're called Izzes or something like that from Pit.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and but these were just rad. I had probably 30 of them. And they were like a couple bucks for a bag of 3, and they were, you know, exclusives. You couldn't go to a store and buy them, but they were cheesy, but it was a, you know, it was the bottom half was like a worm like snake like
I remember thing. Those well.
And then two arms and a weird, yeah, desiccated, I think they head.
Were, they came with somebody, and then they just made a whole bunch of them, different colors.
And yeah, and they were either giving them away or they charge a couple bucks for a bag of them. But you know, that was the first time we were seeing that star appeal applied to this. And when you get into stuff like when he got into Kiss, the Kiss action figures. but one of the things that they did that once they established the Spawn line, then he went on to do the Movie Maniacs line, and the Movie Maniacs line was brilliant because it didn't just focus on, it did have them, it did have your Mike Myers and your Freddy Kruegers and stuff like that, but it also had what was the name of the silent, like it had silent film monsters in it.
Oh, now there was somebody else who did some silent ones, but by and large they didn't do those. There was somebody who did like Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, and
but it wasn't him. But no. they would do. All
but it kinds. Did inspire that sort of.
Yeah, but they would do all kinds of weird. You know, McFarlane would do all kinds of weird stuff and put
well,
it
you
out
had,
there.
In the Movie Maniacs line, in addition to like a couple of creatures from John Carpenter's The Thing,
which was insane.
Yeah, or Freddy Krueger and things like that. You had. Oh, what am I thinking of? Like, Shaft. You had the Samuel L. Jackson
right.
Shaft figure, which I'm sure, for a while, became the go-to custom figure for Nick Fury.
It had to. It had to. There was no... If you wanted an 8-inch Nick Fury figure, that was your... That was custom made. You were already done, essentially. But it was really great. Like, when they hit their stride, they were on fire. Like, there was no stopping McFarlane Toys at all. And it wasn't until our current market, where almost anyone can make a toy
yeah.
that rivals the early McFarlane, or the middle ages of McFarlane Toys.
Oh, yeah, because at the height, I mean, good Lord, it literally got to the point where there was a McFarlane store.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the beginning of the end was the whole Tony Twist thing, which I think is complete bullshit anyway. But
what's that?
The Tony Twist thing was there was a character, a vicious gangster-type character that appeared in Spawn Comics, I think it was, called Tony Twist.
Okay.
And apparently there was some hockey player who was sort of colloquially known as Tony Twist.
Okay.
And he basically successfully sued for some ungodly sum.
Really?
Because he said that, you know, his reputation was ruined by this. I'm like, who ever heard of this stupid character in Spawn?
Right.
I mean, it was a character in Superman.
$15 million he won.
Yeah, $15 million, that's right. And that was pretty much the Empire shuddered a bit there and faltered.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. So what happened after? So what happened after McFarlane opened the doors?
Well, you wind up with a bit of a flood—not really a floodgate situation, but the stream begins to flow.
And who?
But in a way, you kind of did, because you had some. Like the worst, most forgettable comics were getting the action figure treatment. There were, because, you know, the proof of concept was now there, so really bad indies.
We're getting, yeah.
Yeah, I've lost my thing there, but,
Well, I remember at one point there was an Ash action figure, which was, I believe, Quesada and Palmiotti's.
Oh, yes.
Painkiller Jane action figures. What is our favorite? Which one?
I think the things like Double Impact, with Jazz and China.
Exactly.
The thing that the explosion, the floodgate that actually did open, was the Hot Chick indie comic series that were
right
getting some sales because they had, you know, hot naked chicks as their main characters. So you had Widow and Double Impact.
Which one was our favorite with the scabbard, the sword?
Well, the thing is, Chastity?
Chastity
got one. But, you know, there was some good stuff, too, because, like, More Action Collectibles, which was the More Studios, which was originally in Fort Worth, were doing licensed things like Lady Death and Purgatory. And
right.
Damn, those were some fine, fine sculpts.
And Evil Eddie.
Evil Ernie.
Let's not be sexist. There was a good Evil Ernie action figure out there.
Yeah, you know, like all the bubbling
weird green,
pink coming out of the little Alka-Seltzer bubbles coming out of him. But you know, this was also the period that brought us, you know, characters like Snowman and
Oh God. I forgot about Snowman.
Gen 13 figures.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And then you got people thinking there was some kind of commercial viability in the indie. And choosing the wrong indie, there was the Ultra Force action figure.
Oh, God. The awful Prime. Oh, my God. It hurts.
There was a Corpse guy's name. He may have been just Corpse for all I remember, but... Yeah, but to see a lot more interest in both, not only the direct market stuff, like those god-awful, aforementioned ones that were like China and Jazz got more variations as well. That was the other thing you were seeing a lot of in those indies is like, you know, repaint their bikinis in gold, silver, blue, orange. Helena, the blood-spattered Helena figure. Sisters of Darkness.
Glyph and Raven. I did was put it into
You're
Google.
You're having a 90s flashback.
Oh, I put it into Google and it hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. Look at these. I implore you, just look them up. Just look up the pictures of what came before. If you're under the age of 30 or 25, you haven't seen these. Like, you have not bore witness to what was out there prior to our current generation of toys. Stuff you'll never, ever, ever see again. There's a figure out there called it was an Avatar Press in 1998. Do you remember Web Witch?
Oh my, Web Witch! Yes.
Oh,
figure is a piece of work, I'll tell you.
There's so much; it's coming back. I don't want it to come back. I want it to stay buried.
What was so funny with that one was it had the little plug-in spider legs.
Yes, it did.
They came out of her torso.
Just never go back to never. No, I'm glad we came through that. We had to come through that era to get to where we are now.
But you also about the time you had the Web Witches and you also had larger companies putting out at Toys R Us the Ultra Force. But there was also a Savage Dragon line,
right.
And good luck finding She-Dragon without the mohawk. Good God.
It's like Cable with Baby.
Indeed. I just, you know, here's what you do if you're looking for that one. Forget it. So.
Well, you know, that brings us into the place where we are, almost to the place where we are now, which as we, you know, as we come up, we've got like 15 minutes left of the show. I think that, you know, what we need to look at is where what has happened in the last 5-7 years to the industry? Because I think what we've seen is the melding of technology interest and merchandise and marketing to allow us to do any number of things now. For instance, Cole and I's favorite toy line that has ever existed short of Star Wars, which is the Reaction toy line, which shouldn't exist. Okay? If you would have asked either of us, ask us 15 years ago if we would have had something like the Reaction toy line, we would have laughed you out. Absolutely. Without question, you would not.
Just the concept of someone actually managing to put all of those different disparate licenses and be allowed that kind of leverage, that latitude to
right
have them all to scale, so Corbin Dallas can meet Mr. Spock and go hunting a great white shark with Quint.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, well, that chick from Tomorrowland looks on doing nothing. Oh, sure, that's just what I was playing here at my desk.
That's right. That's the whole
I don't know why
thing.
I bought the Tomorrowland chick. She was on sale at the Disney stores.
And that's the whole thing, right? Like that's what our current level of technology has given us, is the ability to do exactly what you just said, which is the ability to have Marty McFly go back in time with Snake Plissken. And, like those things exist now. When we were kids, we had to do all that stuff with, like, weird scale, cardboard boxes and, half-ass figures that we came up with on our own. Now these things exist, and that is brilliant.
Or your Snake Plissken figure was, three times as tall as,
exactly.
Anybody else.
Exactly.
Another line on the subject of the indie comic that I want to touch on is, of all things, Toy Biz went out and legitimized the indie.
Yes, they did.
I mean, there was a time where you had, like, Kevin Matchstick from Mage action figure. I think we talked earlier about Bone figures that had come out from the, I'm drawing a blank on who the original publisher was, but the Bone would eventually be picked up by Image.
Right.
And you'd occasionally see somebody like, is it Scott Kurtz's PvP?
Mm-hmm.
There'd be, like, some plush figurines and stuff like that, or also from Texas, a local boy. Drawing a blank on the author, but the Strangers in Paradise would see. The closest you got in some cases to not really so much toys, but there was also a bit of a slight indie boom in statuary. More Action Collectibles was at the forefront of that because, this was also the period where who was it? You had all the Marvel, Bowen Designs was doing all the Marvel minibus, and DC was holding a very tight reins on its characters by producing all of its own statuary in-house, as it were, with DC Direct. But you saw things even like Kitchen Sink Press actually commissioned and produced a porcelain figurine of Omaha the Cat Dancer.
Really?
Which I dearly want to own one, because it's amazing that ever happened.
Right, yeah. Speaking of things that should never have happened.
Yeah, exactly. So, there were two lines of Toy Biz, what they called their legendary heroes.
Absolutely, there were, yeah.
Line, or legendary comic hero, something like that. And you had things like the only action figure I collected, Judge Dredd.
You did. You had Judge Dredd. Absolutely.
You had Judge Dredd and Judge Death. You had Witchblade. Witchblade? Witchblade. the Savage Dragon, who'd already enjoyed his own line. Super Patriot, who'd appeared in that line but got a better version of himself.
Mike Allred's Madman makes an appearance
in
this line,
too. Yes, Madman. Yeah. There's trying to think of who was. Oh, and then there were two lines, and between the two of them, in fact, Ben Edlund's The Tick, which Bandai had done a series more based on the cartoon. This particular series gave us The Tick more based on the comic. And I think that they had done an exclusive of Barry, who was in the comics The Tick.
Right.
The Tick defeated, and Barry just had to become Barry, and he went insane. And I need to look and see if that actually did get made, because it was beautiful. He had his big tick-shaped shield and everything. I would love to own that. But you had, like, Ripclaw from Cyberforce. And what they did to make this even the more marketable... Because when you get into indies, you always get a mixed bag. This is what killed the indie hero cliques, is they made poor choices.
Right.
This line made some pretty decent choices in the nature of its mix, but they, the other big audience draw was that they banked on the up-and-coming Build-A-Figure.
Right. They did, well, they were taking their cues from...
themselves, basically. Because
yeah,
it was,
yeah.
These were by Toy Biz.
Yeah, they were taking their cues from Toy. You know, Toy Biz was taking their cues from what they did with Marvel.
Let's exactly, their Marvel yeah. Legends. Exactly, and in fact, that was the pioneering concept of the Build-A-Figure was brilliant because it allowed collectors to get big characters that they might not have had otherwise without burdening retail with a large footprint toy.
Right.
And so, you know, if you went and got your Freak Force Star.
Which was interesting, yeah.
You know, Star from Freak Force, you could get the head and shoulders of Monkey Man and O'Brien.
Right.
You could get characters from, you know, Marv from Sin City. And then the second series, you could build Pit from the series Pit.
Well, and the cool thing about this was, once you start getting into the indie spotlight action figure series, which is kind of after that, but that it's the natural kind of child of that line you're talking about. That's where you get your Barry Hubris figure.
Okay.
But that's where you get your real...
I forgot that was his last name.
Yeah, Hubris. That's where you also get your Dick Tracy, your real nice Dick Tracy
figure.
Oh, that's
right. It looks like Dick Tracy in the comics.
Right. But the thing is, this is they were put out by Shocker Toys, which is another...
Oh, yeah, they gave us Scud the Disposable Assassin.
Exactly, Rob Schraub's Scud the Disposable Assassin. Here's the cool thing about that, and something that we should talk about before this show is over, is these toys, along with, if you remember my crazy, hardwood erection over the H.P. Lovecraft 3 3/4 inch, like, reaction-style figures that were out little while ago, along with... any slew of toys. They did one on all the the Black Skull and the original The Fly. Remember all those figures? Kickstarter, Indiegogo. All of a sudden, you have a platform that if you want to make a toy and you have the means to do it, you don't have to go sit in a boardroom and have people tell you that this is the wrong color or this isn't going to sell. Or this, we can't market this without 18 missiles and a missile launcher attached to it. You can go to the public and say, hey, this is what we want to do. We want to make a Tick action figure, a Hubris action figure, a Golden Age action figure series, which is the ones that I'm talking about. We want to make these, and if you help us achieve our goal, we will send you the action figures. We live in a world
exactly.
now where
and
that exists. How
exactly.
cool is that?
And you don't wind up with dreadful missteps like the 1984's Archie Comics Mighty Crusaders action figures from Remco featuring the Eraser
The Eraser.
And the Stang.
The Stang. But you will be angered to know that Barry Hubris was a 2010 San Diego Comic-Con exclusive.
Of course it was.
Because why wouldn't it be? But I wonder, because now I'm on the Shocker Toys website. Can you buy it at this point? But they did do a fantastic Max figure. They did all kinds of amazing, a Shadowhawk figure. They did a Kabuki figure, which is another one that's had multiple figures made. Scud the Disposable Assassin. Do you remember, they did this figure. I forgot they did this figure. The Zen figure. Do you remember the alien?
Oh, Zen the Intergalactic Ninja, of course. Yes. Yes, I'd forgotten they'd done Zen.
Grendel. These figures are being made because we wanted them made. The Phantom. Fist of Justice. Just so many. The Defenders of the Earth set.
Oh, yes.
Which, you know, if you don't know who the Defenders of the Earth are, we're talking the Phantom, Flash Gordon, Mandrake. Do you remember seeing the pictures of that series? Like, insane. And we can make that happen. How crazy is that? How awesome
is that? Yeah, in fact,
Shocker
Toys even went so far as to do some... for 2007 San Diego Comic-Con, resin figures of Deathclock from Metalocalypse.
There you go. So good.
So brutal.
So we live in a world now. You can buy the Barry Hubris figure from their website, by the way.
Excellent.
$30, but well
That's
worth every cent. That's
not bad for something that, I mean, I can't find it on eBay at any price.
Hunter Rose. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Black and white, monochrome Dick Tracy. So cool. Like, this stuff is so rad. You keep saying we live in a, you know... It is that
golden age, literally, because everything is going to be out there. Somebody has found the value in everything new and old.
Exactly. What do you want to see? I'm asking that now. Like, we have the technology. We can build it. We can make it stronger. What haven't you seen that you really want to see? I could tell you for me, it might mimic or echo yours, but I want to hear yours first.
Wow, that's a good one. I mean, honestly, because one of the things that happened, I was racking my brain to try to remember, during that indie comic figure boom, with the god-awful figures, there was one comic character, it was from an adult comic, they actually had a removable top.
Really?
And I would later see pictures of it. And if you imagine, like, if you took a Barbie-style breast, the way they come across is just sort of... Yeah, that suggests breasts, and you have, you know...
Right, the implication is there.
Yeah. And then just put a pink dot. That was what awaited you underneath the removable top on that, which I thought was brilliant. But honestly, because there would be a point where, you know, recognizing the direct market, recognizing the adult collector market, I would love to see action figures based on Omaha the Cat Dancer.
Okay.
To have Omaha, Chuck Cat, Kurt Huddles, other characters who I've been away from that series for so damn long, I can't remember their names, but, you know, I would love to see that. Where you would have, you know, because primarily what Omaha the Cat Dancer was a soap opera.
Right.
It just had a lot of sex in it.
Exactly. So it was a soap opera.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it was unlike the soap opera, they didn't put the sheets over them.
Right.
So
there was no muslin and soft lighting.
But I think, you know, you could market a line of Omaha the Cat Dancer figures of the characters fully clothed and then have your adult only subline.
Yeah.
That, you know, pays tribute to Reed Waller's amazing artwork.
I agree. That's a good idea.
You know, I would pay serious money for that. I mean, good God, we live in an era where Nika Toys is about to come out with the Hateful Eight action figures. Limited run.
Right.
And I would suggest, if you see them offered, jump on that mother right now. Because the Django Unchained figures are worth a fortune, because everybody went, you know, in our controversy-fueled society, everybody got all up in arms about that.
Well, McFarlane had, in Toys R Us, and not only did I know this for, I saw them, and I was like, what the hell, were the Marv in the electric chair action figures? Do you remember those? They had those in there. Everybody threw a fit because maybe some blue meth was showing in the Breaking Bad action figures. Oh, how short your memory is when there was a Marv and electric chair action figure that would actually have electrocuting, like, action.
Oh, yeah, like, he would writhe and...
Right? But for me, and I think you'll agree, Star Wars Black 6-inch style, and I'm sure this is coming, I just haven't seen it yet, Saga action figures.
Oh, dear God, yes.
Done. Take all my money.
Oh, hell.
Take it all. It's
done. I want, like, a big-ass plush Lion Cat.
Right? Like, think of the line that they could...
Lion Cat would not be saying a damn thing, because I ain't lying here. I want... Lion Cat.
But, like, you could squeeze it and it would say liar. Like, how great would...
Oh, that would be perfect. Lying.
How great would that be? All of the action, all of the figures, you know, because we are talking, when we talked about Saga before, it is epic in scope and scale the way that Star Wars is. Try saying epic in scope and scale the way Star Wars is without...
I would definitely want, though, in a situation like this, I would want them to... a manufacturer to find a sculptor like the sculptor on DC's Kingdom Come and Just Lines, who can capture Fiona Staples' art.
Yes.
Because if those characters don't look like they just walked off the damn page, I don't want a facsimile of these characters. I don't want Marco and the Will and Lion Cat to just sort of, it's kind of like it. I want them to look like they just walked out of Fiona Staples' own artwork.
But we're in a period now. This is what I'm saying. We're in a period now where
you can just literally say, here, draw this, and we will make it into 3D.
Right, Fiona Staples, draw this from four different, draw this in a 360, essentially. We're going to plug it into the computer, we're going to CAD scan it, rip it down, rotoscope it, and put it in a 3D printer, and it's going to look exactly like this. Like, that's the world we live in. You can have that. You can have that tomorrow, if you want it. It's so great. Like, why don't we have, that's my thing, is we live in this world, why don't we have everything? Like, everything exists now. Like, you can 3D print action figures, articulated action figures. You know, with all the different component parts, pop them all together, and you have an action figure. You still have to have them painted.
You can 3D print things you cannot manufacture in any other way. There's guys that come out, were selling these 3D printers and printed materials out at Alcon last couple of years. And there's a thing that looks like about the size of a hockey puck, with all these interlocking gears. And if you manipulate the center, the gears, the teeth of the other gears bite into each other and they rotate gears that surround that center gear.
Mm-hmm.
That is impossible to manufacture.
You can't manufacture the gear inside of the gear without...
Without building it from the outside,
it's
the
so
inside out.
Crazy. Oh, that's
it's
where
not
we are.
Built and assembled. That is literally willed into existence, as I was saying.
Yeah.
So, good choice on the, because I have become quite hooked on Saga.
It's right, and I knew it. When I suggested, I'm like, this is Cole's comic. Huh. Because as much as Star Wars lives in our imagination, and it does, you know, especially for Cole and I, Saga is like Star Wars with no limiters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There is nothing. It assumes that you're willing to take whatever it gives you and just go with it. There is enough of the familiar there to hang your hat on. So it's not like watching the damn Ewok movie and trying to understand what the hell they're saying. But, you know, there are elements that are you understand, like board games or houses or war or...
Right, they're overarching themes that exist.
Sex things. Yeah, sex things and television shows and rocket ships and these, you know, the things you'll understand. And then there are bizarre things that make no damn sense at all, like a giant St. Bernard-looking creature that shoots darts out of its nose.
Right, but you go with it. You're like,
by the time you meet Sweet Boy, you don't care.
And it's too good.
It's perfectly natural that he looks like a St. Bernard and shoots darts of any variety you want. It's like Dr. McCoy's hypo spray. Whatever you need, that's what's coming out in dart form.
You've descended to a point of madness that you can't... You've already committed.
But it's a beautiful kind of madness where you come away from this world that shouldn't make any sense at all, and everything is crystal clear, and the thing you want most to do is play Now Meets Now.
Right. No, absolutely.
You want to get out an old vintage Now Means Now board game and play that sucker until the light flames at the top.
All right. Speaking of pulling the plug on something, we got to pull the plug on this. We've gone too far. But yeah, that's where we are. So the next issue, we're caught up now. We have gone the four issues. We're caught up, which means we get to have fun the next issue of Hey Kids Comics.
We are going to do something we love,
which is ripping apart toys.
Now, we love to see the toys that belonged buried in the backyard, that belonged to, that deserved M80 strapped to them,
right?
That were meant to be subjected to some sort of bizarre Bob Guccione Caligula style machine death.
Lower the horse.
Indeed.
Damn it. Damn it.
Yeah, that brought back some memories.
Oh, could the world just hear me cringe? Because I think
there are memories that, if we're very fortunate and very blessed, have escaped us. Oh. I am capable of that, but others are not. So it was with some devious joy that I will rake for them.
That you get to foist upon.
Yes, when the things are conjured into my consciousness, I will then rake for them in the minds of others.
You are the Clint Howard of my life. Yes. Yep.
I hope you'll relish it as much as I.
Fucking Clint Howard. You are baby Clint Howard to my Captain Kirk.
That's what you... My teeth and the big bald head.
So awful. Oh God. So yes, next issue we get to delve into what did you name this one?
This is Toylandia WTF, which is, of course, Weird Toy Forum.
Weird Toy Forum. That's exactly what that stands for.
The awful to the Mighty Crusaders may come up again, because, you know, who doesn't want a tubby little action figure called the Eraser?
Oh my God! Why don't you plug us up?
They should have had a built-in eraser, quite frankly.
Why don't you plug us up? Because we need to get out of here and have Thanksgiving.
Yes, indeed. I can smell the turkey, the ham, the sweet potatoes.
Oh my God! Here we go.
The stuffing, sage, cornbread, old dried 3-day-old bread that was found in the bread box and hadn't molded. And meanwhile, you can...
I'm not saying anything. I'm just
listen to us on the Jedi Call Universe.
JediCall.com.
You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. JediCall.com is the website where you can find Hey Kids Comics and other exciting things. You can, including the Rancor Pit, and then every the first and third Sundays of the month, now noon to one. We
Big
are
move.
Moving the time slot.
Big move.
Noon to one. Making room for some reruns of the Wacky Racers. No, actually, that's not true.
God, I wish that were true. I wish that were true so hard.
I love reruns of the Wacky Racers. But on the deepelementonair.com, the Rant Crapit Live will come to you straight out of Dallas, Texas, every other, well, actually, the first and third Sundays of every month, alternating with the Iron Claw Wrestling Show.
That's awesome.
Isn't that great? I mean, you have a Star Wars show one week, a wrestling show the next week, and
what more could you
every
ask
now for? To get one of those three Sunday months, it's like, well, you're out of luck. It's
here's your Wacky Racers.
You gotta look for some Wacky Racers, or Wacky Erasers, for that matter. So check us out at deepelementonair.com. As you're listening to this, Eddie and I have been invited to be a part of the Star Wars-themed holiday parade in Duncanville, Texas.
That's so fantastic!
The Rancor Pit will be represented there. Also do want to let you know about... and we'll let you know about it next time because I've drawn a blank on it. Apparently, public radio has a network for podcasts, and we would like much for you to nominate us or go on and give a testimonial so that we might become part of that.
That would be fantastic.
Recommended network, and I will get that information for you because God knows it slipped out of my head. It was a very clever name, and it escapes me.
It escapes me. But we'll find the answer to that one for sure.
Mrs. Jedi Cole told me about it just a little earlier today, and again, it has escaped me. But look for us. We'll have it on the Jedi Cole Universe website. We'll be linking people there in our impassioned plea to get some coverage there as well. If you like what you're listening to here, help spread the word.
Absolutely. Because we would like to be on public radio. Then I could really work my Ira Glass impression out, and you could...
I think, if we could get on a show with Ira Glass and they seem to be retiring...
Garrison Keillor, we could...
be like a dream come true, and we would just completely really clamp out. Up out of...
of course sheer... we would. We would never talk. We'd be like, I don't know... All right. Well, everybody, go out there, buy, collect, enjoy, create your favorite toys. You can do it now. You can pick up a 3D printer for $300. I think Black Friday specials, I've seen them for $200, and I'm not kidding. That's not an exaggeration. You can buy
and
one.
We live in a world where everyone can own a 3D printer.
Right. And I'm surprised we haven't yet, but we
and they're,
I'm sure
they're going
we
to
will.
Become even more commonplace. And I would jump all over that mother if I thought for a moment I could get the other end, the software end of it, to
behave
for me. Yeah, but for those who can do that, it's an amazing era.
It is. We live in amazing times, and we're going to talk about some real train wrecks of toys. Next week. With that being said, enjoy your Thanksgiving. We hope you have a great time, that it's relaxing, and you get to visit with family and friends and enjoy yourselves. And you know, we love this. We are thankful for each and every one of you that listens
Absolutely.
To the show.
And if your family don't understand you, come back to the JC, listen to some old podcasts, and revisit the family you love here, because we love you for the way you are.
That's right. And buy, collect, enjoy your comics. Buy, collect, enjoy your toys. We care very much, and we hope you have a safe and relaxing Thanksgiving. Say good night, Cole.
Good night, everybody. And if somebody does have a 3D printer prowess and wants to create a custom Omaha the Cat Dancer action figure for me, just drop us a line.
Not for nothing. Just saying.
Yeah.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.